use the word grows. So what's the components of that earlier stage may change in the later stage and change into something else, evolve into something else in the later stages. However, the keeper of bhakti doesn't work quite like that. What's in the prior stage continues into the next stage. We don't really have experience of that in the material world. Let's say, Dehi nosvam yata dehi komaram govanam jara. Just the first part. Those different stages, babyhood to boyhood to youth to old age, where's that little baby body that we once had? It's gone. Somebody that's past youthhood to old age, where's that youthful body gone? It's gone. We give something up and take on something else. But with the bhakti creeper, it's not give up that prior devotional component and take on something else. Rather, that prior devotional component endures and becomes simply more strong, more substantial, more mature. So, chant goes all the way to the end. And listening, bringing our attention to the holy name, hearing, listening attentively to the holy name, becomes stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger as one advances in Krishna consciousness. This focusing the mind according to a spiritual intent, a spiritual desire, becomes stronger and stronger and stronger in the course of time. Then these other three, they're different parts of what we do with the mind. Bring the mind to Krishna. If the mind wanders, be detached, not fruitive, but continue that mood of service through the wandering mind phase. Neglect the mind if it's simply uncooperative. And now we're going to move into the next evolving stage. So all the other stages continue, but we've all had this experience, sometimes more often, sometimes more intensely, but we've all had the experience that when you're really striving sincerely and diligently to achieve something, especially something spiritual, particularly something spiritual, what happens? Now, let's try things like, you know, being attentive. We have a little exercise and we have our daily experience of trying to be attentive. And what happens? The mind doesn't cooperate. But if you continue very sincerely, not casually, very sincerely, try anything in devotional service. Try to become an unalloyed devotee. No desire for anything other than Krishna service. Help! So that's humility. One recognizes one's insignificance. One realizes one's dependency upon Krishna. So that's what this Shikshastakam verse number 3 is. The first two verses are hearing the glories of the holy name, hearing of the merciful nature of Krishna in the form of his holy name. And knowing all these things, still I have no attraction. Nanu Raga. Dur Daivid. Idrisham Hajini Nanu Raga. No attraction. I want to have attraction. So, humility, so that one can continue that practice, go back to number 1, continue to chant despite whatever's going on. In a very sincere way, it awakens and then strengthens humility. Devotional humility doesn't have any place in the material world. And people ask this question commonly. I can understand how to be, devotional practice when I'm not in the workplace, but how do you do that when you're in the workplace? Because people just take advantage of you, and that whole kind of question that goes on all the time. Or the younger devotees in school, or, if you're just humble, people will walk all over you. So how do you do it? You're supposed to not just be Krishna conscious out of the workplace, and then Krishna conscious out of the workplace, and then lose it when you're in the workplace. How do you be Krishna conscious in situations where people are very competitive, and they don't have at all a sense of devotion, and sometimes even in Vaishnava Sangha we find situations like that. What do I do? So, let's chant together Shikshastakam verse number 3. You probably know it without looking. Trinadati Suni Chena Karor Vishnu Amanina Mahadeya Kirtaniya Sarahari. So, Suni Chena. What does that mean? What does Nicha mean? It means low. And lower than low. Comparative. Sunichena is lower. Lower than Trin, which means straw. Trinadapi Sunichena. Feeling oneself, it's an internal disposition that one can not imitate, but one can cultivate, especially when you're trying very sincerely and it's not happening, and you recognize my own power is insufficient in the spiritual realm. I require the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So one can continue in that merciful call if one is feeling oneself in a humble state of mind, lower than the straw on the street. And Toror Iva Sahishnana, or Toror Api Sahishnana. Toror is a tree. More tolerant than a tree. Trees don't get glorified enough. Trees are very nice. In one sense, they're very nice because they're an example of always rendering service. Their existence is just rendering service. They supply shade in the heat of the summer. They supply wood for heat in the winter. They supply fruits or berries or seeds or flowers for the birds or for people, depending upon the type of tree it is. Simply service. And so it's exemplary for us. Our life is also meant to be just a life of service. Not only because, hey, that's nice to be like that, it's our constitutional position. And there's no exploitation of others for the tree, it's just giving service. Someone breaks a limb of the tree, doesn't protest. Someone starts carving in the tree, doesn't protest, just serves. Tolerant, being supported and sustained by a mood of service. Like that, even more tolerant in the mood of service, like the tree. And amanina. Amanina indicates not wanting respect for oneself. So, what does that mean? We all know what that means. Now, when we do something that's noble and worthy, we want people to recognize it. We may not advertise, "Oh, I want you to recognize it," but we want people to recognize it. And if it's not recognized, we hope that somebody recognizes it, at least. At least I recognize it. But a position of one that Mahaprabhu is advising here is not wanting. Like, nice reference is, again, Prahlad Maharaj. He's one of my primary heroes in Krishna consciousness, role model hero of personalities. He didn't want anything. He wasn't upset with his father, Hiranyakashipu, who tried to kill him for honoring Vishnu, for worshipping Vishnu. He tried in so many ways to kill his son. And Prahlad didn't think, "Oh, he's bad." He was thinking, "He should be forgiven." Prabhupada would often glorify like that. Christ, "Forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." Haridas Thakur, who was simply forgiving those who were beating him to death. And when they described to him, "Oh, we're going to be in big trouble with the Qazi if he finds out 23 marketplaces and you're still alive. Oh, that's a problem for you, then I can die." So he closed his eyes and went into a trance, and they thought he was dead. They threw his body in the river. Not wanting to give trouble to anyone, but simply wanting to give service. That's not our platform, but that's the platform that Mahaprabhu is advising to go to the next level of spiritual evolution. At least cultivate like that. Not wanting praise from others. And at the same time, always offering honor in all circumstances. It's one thing to not... offer honor to others. It's another thing to not expect any honor unto oneself. But in such a state of... So that's humility. Humility, that the real essence of that humility is service. I'm simply meant for service. So again, Prahlad Maharaj. My existence is simply as your servant. If the opportunity to desire something is given to me, some benediction, then I'm going to want something selfish. So please don't ask me to take a benediction. And not only something selfish, something will be detrimental to myself and others. Because my nature is bad association, bad this, bad that, disqualification. So please don't ask me. But even more fundamentally, please don't ask me is, that's not what my relationship with you is. My relationship with you is simply service. Not, I do some service and I have some expectation. How can one genuinely be in that position unless they're fully satisfied? They don't want anything but service. That's Shikshastakam verse number 4 coming up. But the seed is the seed of humility. So, I think he's going to put number 6 on the board. Whoops, 7 on the board. Humility. That's instructed very nicely in Shikshastakam number 3. Now, when humility awakens, we'll take two different situations. One situation is a calamity situation. We all know what calamity situations are. I just received word from one nice devotee couple. They haven't told anybody except each other and me that the husband has a spinal cancer, and a unique kind of spinal cancer, and it's probably not going to be treatable. And maybe, maybe some special kind of surgery that may, they may become paralyzed from the waist down, and they may survive, and they may not, and it's, but it's not very likely. So, you know, perfectly wonderful devotee couple. Imagine you were in that situation, or the wives, imagine if you heard that about your husband. You know, complete uncertainty. You know, and it's like from menu, there's so many circumstances that arise that are completely unpredictable, and sometimes they happen because that's the nature of this place. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. So, what do you do when a circumstance is calamitous? There's only, in circumstances like that, it's only Krishna's intervention, if anything. If Krishna so desires, he can make the situation different. But is Krishna lacking in his mercy if Krishna doesn't make the situation different? Where is one shelter? So when there's a mathematical formula. Humility plus need. You can make an intense need results in taking shelter. Equals intense and strong taking shelter in the holy name. One time we were coming back in New York City, we were coming back from an evening Harinam in Manhattan. We were taking the subway, the whole Harinam party. One of the devotees, very nice devotee, but kind of little, you know, a little spaced out. He got on the wrong platform. So all the devotees are over here, and he's over on the other platform going uptown instead of downtown. And then a train came in between where we were and where he was. And some night prowlers figured it out. He had this nice strap thing over his shoulders, and inside was Lakshmi that he had collected from Harinam Sankirtan. So we didn't hear anything because the subway noise was so loud. But he told us afterwards, they came and, you know, started, they were, it was muggers, and they were going to let him have it and take his money. And just at the top of his lungs, he called out Mishringadev, just kept over and over calling out Mishringadev, Mishringadev, Mishringadev. And they thought he was crazy, and they left him alone. Then a similar, we were going for Harinam in Central Park. There was a big concert in Central Park. They rarely have those anymore, but then they had concerts in Central Park. So the whole Harinam party, and you know, if you go on Harinam, don't leave women in the back, because that's what happens. A woman was straggling in the back, and some guys grabbed her and pulled her into the bushes and kind of do something bad to her. And she did the same thing, just called the Sringadev's name so loud. And his remark was, if that's the way you're going to be about it, and left her. So, calamity situations cause intense shelter-taking. Okay, so maybe we're not in that situation, whether it's a death-threatening or safety-threatening situation of life. We're just going along in complacency. So we're not going to advance in spiritual life where there's complacency. Or, as I was sharing at the very beginning, there's something that we know and something that we're practicing, and that's a gap. And gaps, you let it go, and your whole spiritual life can dissolve. So we don't want that to happen. More, we want to come for a retreat, and this is a principle that's how you can chant when you're just doing your chanting in your home every day, or wherever, whatever your circumstance is every day. And it can be amplified or intensified here at a retreat by strengthening that desire to to go further in our chanting, in our relationship with Krishna, and that's a need. It's a positive spiritual need. So if you can recall what I was describing earlier, give energy to those spiritual needs, not the material ones, the spiritual ones, the strength of one's connection with Krishna, the capacity to take shelter of Krishna's holy name. Give that energy, give that attention. It's important. So give it that which is important, give it attention. It's one thing that I've learned about life. Something that's important, give it attention. And when you give things that are important attention, even like practical things of life, it's important, give it attention. And it may undergo some, you know, wobbly phases, but it grows. Give something attention, it grows. You follow, give it attention, and according to guidance of our scriptures and our spiritual teachings, and it grows nicely. It may undergo some challenges for, you know, some period of time. It's in practical matters of life as well as like this. It may not seem practical, but you know, the crucial matters of life, chanting the holy name. Pay attention, because it's really important. It's the most important thing that we do in our whole life. And when that need connects with a mood of humility, I need mercy, then we take shelter. So that's this next one that Aditi is going to put on the board, is Nam Ashraya. Ashraya, the shelter. Shelter in the holy name. So again, where does humility come from? It comes from life, if you're paying attention. Because quite different than the material competitive spirit that we're so carefully trained in our education process, in competitive sports and competitive academics and competitive everything. Compete, compete. Very different is spiritual attainment doesn't come from competition. It doesn't come from a mood of trying to accomplish something. It comes from a very sincere desire to try to please, to be the servant of one's superior. Ultimately, Krishna is pleased by pleasing the Vaishnavas. So, we want to please Krishna. It's a whole different approach. And when you're trying to do like that, I'm repeating from something that was mentioned earlier, but when you're trying sincerely in devotional service, our own effort is not enough. That's a nice realization. For a materialistic person, that's terrible. For a devotee, it's wonderful, because it awakens humility. I need the mercy of those who are merciful. So, to go yet another stage in spiritual progress, in chanting of the holy name, where there's a taste for chanting, that humility has become amplified. Now we're just speaking of awakening it. We'll go to another stage in a little bit, that is, you know, perhaps way beyond our scope, but it helps us understand what we need to do now to go the little bit of scope that we have of becoming humble at whatever stage of spiritual advancement that we're presently hovering around. Humility is spiritual humility, not the other kind. Not the cowering in a corner and trembling and fearful, and not that kind of humility. Acting with conviction, firmness, trust in Krishna, but with full dependence upon His mercy. So we'll go back to something that I mentioned at the very beginning, the mood of a retreat. There's this calling from Krishna, please come to me. Or something from our side, a calling that says, I want to go to Krishna. I don't know if Krishna wants me, because what is my worth? But I want to go to Krishna. I want to be in that association, that divine association. I want that experience as the core and essence of my life. So we have to let go of some other things. So this lens of how we see things, this is part of a retreat, or part of progressing. The egoistic demeanor through which, and that has its really nasty connotation, like, you know, puffed up kind of egoism. But, you know, there's the mode of goodness kind of egoism too, that says, you know, egoistically, I'm a good person, and so on and so on and so on. And I do things to help other people. I have this sense of contentedness about myself because I have and others don't have, so I give what they don't have because I have. And I feel mode of goodness egotism or egoism, very contented about myself. It's hard to make spiritual progress. It's hard to make progress in depending upon Krishna's mercy from that space. So I'm portraying it in a little bit exaggerated terms so that it's clear. And it may not be so clear in our practical everyday life, but it's there. And when those other shelters are taken away, either because of circumstance, the calamity circumstance, or because we're striving to break free from the constraints of the material energy and enter into Krishna's domain, requires recognizing our tininess, our insignificance. Why would Krishna want me in his domain? Why would he even give a hoot about what's happening over here? Because his nature is he's loving. And again, that's Prahlad Maharaj saying to Lord Srinadeva, I don't have any qualifications to offer prayers to you. The demigods, they're my superiors. They have the qualification. But because they've asked me to do this, I must do it. I'm obliged. They're my superiors. And coming before you, qualification? No qualification. Disqualification? Abundant disqualification. But one thing I know is that you're merciful. And because you're merciful, whatever I offer, if it's with sincerity, you'll accept. So here I go. I'm under order, and you're merciful. And I want to be pleasing to you. So that's that need. Humility plus need. So we're not commonly so humble. And we're not commonly in the situation of feeling need. Sometimes the pinch of the material circumstance, the need amplifies. But then, where, very important, where does your attention go? Watch, observe, when you're doing your 64-round day tomorrow. By the way, I keep referring to 64-round. There are some devotees here that are newer in their practice of chanting. So we'll have a kind of a split schedule where 32 rounds, and then for the morning session, and we'll do something together in the afternoon for those that feel 32 rounds is something more manageable for them. And the others will complete their 64 rounds. But just so generally, 64-round day, are trying to go further in our discipline of chanting and our experience of Krishna. When those stretches of work, you know, it doesn't feel good. It's a struggle. Like, as we were hearing, mechanical. Dry. It's a valley. I'm feeling down. Watch. Where does your attention go? What's your shelter? Not just, it's very stark when you're chanting, but life is like that also. Where are your shelters? To advance in chanting, it's a call to Krishna, please accept me. Please be my shelter. Please give me shelter. I have no other shelter but you. Please accept me. And it can be, you know, way in the very beginning stage or advanced stage or very advanced stage. It just grows. Words. Namashraya is that eighth item in this list. That's where we're headed next. In this section also is a seed, and just to give it a name, a seed of belonging. So we know from the Narada Pancharatra, there's this verse that describes bhakti in the following verse. Sarva upadhi nirmuktam tat paratvaina nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti rupate. There's a definition by Narada of what bhakti is. And the first line is, what bhakti is described in negation, what bhakti isn't. Or giving up of false designations. So the positive is feeling accepted by Krishna, or feeling one belongs with Krishna. You're part of Krishna's family. In a transcendental sense, Krishna very clearly says that he's the seed-giving father of all living beings. So in the material sense, we have a sense of belonging to some group. And, you know, by bodily type, one is born in this country or that country, born of this color or that color, born of this gender or that gender, born of this, whatever, groupism. Based upon something material. And maybe something subtle material, some ideology, this ism, that ism, this group, that group. And a person has a material designation set may look upon the devotees as, you know, we've got our group too. Maybe we do. In a not so healthy sense. Not so healthy sense is we may also identify in terms of which group within the group. This group or that group. But in the higher sense, as we progress in Krishna consciousness, the letting go of that sense of belonging to, we belong to Krishna. Or in the language of our acharyas, Krishna, I am yours. And you are mine. Not like mine in the sense of property, but my relationship with Krishna, my relationship with you is all that I have. I can't even say, Let's do that one a little bit. I can't say that this body is me because I'm spirit soul. I can't even say this body is mine because it's taken from me. It's given to me and then it's taken from me, so I can't say it's mine. And even the soul, we know from Bhagavad Gita, the soul is one of Krishna's energies. We can't even say the soul is mine. So what's mine? My relationship with Krishna is mine. Or in even simpler language, Krishna, you are mine. So this is the sense, as one progresses through taking shelter of Krishna, in the form of His holy name. That sense of belonging, where there's a place of safety and shelter, genuine safety and shelter. Not, it can't be touched by any material circumstance. Material circumstances can go all kinds of different ways. That can't be taken from us, our shelter in Krishna. I'll make a kind of worldly example of this. During World War II, there were concentration camps, and one person who was in one of those concentration camps, his name is Viktor Frankl. I think he's no longer alive, but he wrote a book after he got out of the concentration camp. He survived while he was watching many people all around him, left and right, and, you know, to the front of him and behind him in their little cells that were sent to the gas chamber. But he survived. And he wrote a book, Man's Search for Meaning. And in the book, it's been republished something like 36 times. It's a very popular book. And one of the phrases in that is that something that he realized while in that circumstance, which sustained his life, that there's something far more important than man's desire or a person's desire to become free from troubling circumstances. That is, there's a deeper meaning, a purpose which he can fulfill, he or she can fulfill. And that it's that deeper meaning, once that shelter is taken, that no material circumstance can take it away. So we can think of lots of things in our lives that are circumstantially what our lives are about. And if you take all those things away, what's left? Whatever that is who we are. It's the real purpose of our being. So we don't require being in a concentration camp to realize that. Although, you know, that's a good opportunity to realize something like that. But we can realize it by just taking proper shelter of the holy name, or conversely, looking where our other shelters are that prevent us from taking shelter in the holy name. So this is, I'm highlighting the point that I made earlier in the introduction part. Be alert, during your intense period of chanting tomorrow, be alert. Be careful to in the positive direction where you're going, and be alert to when that's not happening as you thought it should be happening, as you would like it to be, as you scripted it how it would happen. Where does your attention go? Where are those shelters that are not sheltering Krishna? Or conversely, if it's going very nicely, where's energetically, where is your shelter? Because if it's not sheltering Krishna exclusively, then that experience will not endure. Anyway, it's a very nice lesson in going further in our path of Krishna consciousness up to the point of taking full shelter in Krishna's holy name. Now, I think I'm going to end there. I'm doing this a little differently than our plan was, but we have until... So I was supposed to have finished this in the morning. And then the second session was supposed to be this project, right? So maybe what I'll do is pause for some discussion, because we haven't had any of that. And then you can get ready with the kirtan, the bhajan part. You have the sheets and everything. So any comments or questions on whatever we've covered so far? Yes.
Maharaj, Yes. Is there any other kind of humility?
Yes, there is. A false kind of humility. The false kind of humility I already characterized briefly. Cowering, trembling in a corner, unable to do anything, say anything, think anything, be anything, because I'm this humble being. That's a false kind of humility. Or another, and the other that I grew up with, was the turn the other cheek kind of humility. You've heard that phrase before? So someone slaps you. So the humble person says, go ahead, hit me on the other side. That's what that phrase means. Not that. That's the other kind. The contrastingly, the spiritual kind is, that let's like take the position of Arjuna. Arjuna, in the beginning part of Bhagavad Gita, it looked like humility. His position was, they've wronged us, we deserve, we're entitled to the kingdom by religious law, we're entitled. And they did all these horrible things. They attempted to kill Bhima, they attempted to disrobe Draupadi, they stole our kingdom, they tried to kill us in a house of lack. They did all these bad things, but that's okay. Let them rule the kingdom. Looks very humble. But as far as Krishna is concerned, it's based on the wrong standard. It looks like, but it's not the real thing. The real thing is based on the standard of starting with you're not this body, you're spirit soul, and then what are spirit souls supposed to do? They're supposed to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead wants you to engage in the battlefield. So that was an act of humility, simply in service, and for no selfish purpose whatsoever. So one can act strongly and firmly from a position of humility. The other is to turn the other cheek. Oh, go ahead, hit me on the other side. It's a kind of humility, but it's not what's being spoken of here. Again, adverse circumstances. Facing them with humility means Krishna is your shelter. And favorable circumstances. Dealing with that favorable circumstance with humility. It's not me. It's Krishna's mercy and Krishna's mercy. And Krishna has some service for me over here. Krishna has some service for me over there. It doesn't change with circumstance. It's not created by circumstance. Ahoituki apratiyata yatma supersedati. That's what the real humility is. There's no hetu. There's no material cause that brings it about. And there's nothing that can check it. That's spiritual humility. Anything else? Yes?
Forgiving quality of Haridas Thakur. So, I acknowledge that, you know, somebody made a mistake, but it's difficult to constantly stay on that platform. So, how to be actually forgiving so that...
Practice it. You come to the spiritual platform of who you are and practice it. It's natural. Another element in my response is, if you had made the golden rule, if you had made some mistake, if the roles are reversed, how would you want the other person to regard the mistake that you had made? Forgive you. But what if you did it repeatedly? You'd still like them to forgive you. I mean, what they would like is that you learn your lesson, but what you would like is that you're forgiven. So if you want others to forgive you for your mistakes, forgive others for their mistakes. That doesn't mean do nothing, but just forgive, and maybe you do something. But forgive. Don't hold it. Then you become, you know, implicated in the material energy by holding it. Right? You can do something in service, but don't hold some animosity. Even in the cases where it's deliberate. Persons of just bad character, and they did something really bad, and it hurt. Be forgiving. Your question is how to. Practicing from the spiritual platform. Yes? Hold on, here comes the microphone.
The father is tolerance. Forgiveness is tolerance.
Yes, they're very close. They're brother and sister.
But how to tolerate?
How to tolerate?
How to practice it?
Well, how to practice it. The clue I already gave, and that's service. Who are you? And if you can come to the answer that I'm a servant, then, you know, you're in a serving situation. Let's give a little practical example. A mother with a child. Now, if it wasn't, you know, I look at that situation. I'm not the mother. You go, my goodness. What a mother has to put up with. You know, somebody kicking you, somebody vomiting on you, somebody urinating on you, somebody making messes all over the place. Oh, man. But mothers tolerate it, right? Why? Because they're mothers. They're serving their little... You know, they hope that one day they grow out of that phase, but, you know, while they're in that phase. They're just serving. Isn't it? So, using that as, you know, a model to think of, now, you know, it's not a little infant and the mother, it's another circumstance, and you're a servant. And here comes the situation that's, you know, somebody's, you know, look out, here I come kind of a person. Now what are you going to do? You're a servant, so what are you going to do? You serve them. Now how you serve them may be A, B, C, D, etc., but don't move from that position of I'm a servant. Because you invest your thoughts in, you know, the hurtful thing that happened and series of hurtful things that happened that they did. And you lose your perspective of being a servant. Because your consciousness just got involved in the material energy and being intolerant of something that happened, and you're just like, you know, ready to do, you know. Let them know that you don't like that. Etc. And then you could still let them know, I don't like that, but you could do it from the position of being a servant. And it's a whole other thing. It's a whole other communication.
Inherent need of praise, where we always feel the need that we need to be praised. How do you overcome that?
Purity. When there's purity and there's praise, the praise goes to those who put those qualities that somebody's wanting to praise. Immediately goes to that, whoever those persons are. When there's purity. But, you know, what about when there isn't purity? Well, then it stops here. And then I'm struggling with this praise. No. But really you say, yes. But I'm supposed to be humble. No. Where does it go? I learned a very nice lesson when I took sannyas about humility. Because as a brahmachari, and it's still true, I just like serving everybody. I was happy. And so somebody came along one day and said, "Hey, you've been nominated for sannyas." Really? I didn't know nobody says anything to me about that. So not only that, it's approved. You can take sannyas. I said, "I don't know if I need to take sannyas. I'm happy just being a brahmachari." "Well, what's wrong with you?" "I don't think it's wrong with me. I'm just happy being..." So, it went on like that. And people were then saying, "Oh, you should do this. It's a service." I like service. So then, one day took sannyas. And, from the moment I took sannyas and thereafter, people are paying obeisances. So I paid obeisances, because that's what you do. You pay obeisances. I say, no, don't pay obeisances. "What do you mean, don't pay obeisances?" "Whoever told you that one?" "No, sannyasis are supposed to receive obeisances. It's good for people to..." Boy, is that a difficult one to get used to. But it's service. It's not for me. It's sannyas ashram. It's a service to be... The real service is to be in a good example of a sannyasi. But it's just service. It's not to me. And as long as one is thinking to me, then you got a problem. Some praise. Some acknowledgement. Now, here we are in a Vaishnava culture, and we're supposed to honor others, but not accept honor from others. So that can be a problem, if we're not pure. Because, it's no. Don't do that, which a Vaishnava is supposed to do. "What do you mean, I'm not supposed to do?" "I'm supposed to offer praise, honor others." "No, don't do it." "Can't say that." "Well, what do you do? Go hide under a shell somewhere and become a hermit." The purity, it has to be transparency, that whatever it is that I have is by the mercy of those who have put that wonderful... If you see something good in me, it's because my spiritual master put it there. That's how our acharyas pray. In me you won't find any good qualities. But if you find some good quality, you can understand my spiritual master put it there. All glories to my spiritual master. Just like that.
I have one more question. We all kind of understand that Krishna is the only shelter, American shelter. But despite of that, we are always taking shelter in all the mundane things. How do we truly practice to come under fully Krishna's shelter and forget about other shelters?
Well, that's what we're here for. And there's the theory and then there's the practice. So, as I was describing when, let's say, specifically tomorrow, there's some of us may be doing just fine, some may be down in the valley somewhere. And if that's the circumstance, look and see, observe internally, where's your shelter? Where's your attention go? What do you feel? What do you do? How do you manage those feelings? And if you see it's going towards, let's say, away from Krishna or towards, I'm at the center, you kick that away. You eliminate it by going to Krishna. Go to the light instead of the darkness. Tamasima Jyotirgama. It's an injunction. And you just practice that. You practice that. It's like, going into the forest and there's no path. But sometimes you see there's a path. And how did it become a path? A number of people walked along that particular route and then became a path. So same for ourselves. It may be foreign territory, maybe like a jungle, where false shelters is the program. And where's the real shelter? There's no path. Just keep moving along that. It becomes a path. It becomes second nature. By continuing to go, so it's in the beginning it's sadhana, And as that sadhana becomes more firm and fixed, it becomes regulated sadhana, and then it becomes, in a purified state, because of that regulated sadhana, it becomes natural to us. It becomes second nature, and then it becomes spontaneous, and then it becomes love. We go to Krishna out of love. We don't even have to think about it. So where we are, we have to think about it. And don't go the other places where the false shelters are. To Krishna. So one of the ways to go to Krishna is this call. It can be they get the shelter of the holy name, but Krishna, please accept me. That can be even, you know, way back with number two. Krishna, please accept me. You just practice that. Stay with that. And then when the other shelters, you know, come along, we're going to describe this a little bit more when it comes to Ruchi, that number nine, the ninth, he calls these keys to the doors. So we'll cover the business further. But we'll go back to Rupa Goswami's definition of what is bhakti. It's a type of cultivation. Prabhupada puts this in the introduction to Nectar Devotion. It's a sort of cultivation. He uses that phrase several times, cultivation. And other language I was using is, you make a path by practice to cultivation. So that word cultivation is right from the definition of bhakti that Rupa Goswami gives. Anyabhilashta shunyam jnana karma vidnavatam anukunina Krishna anushilana. Anushilana is the word cultivation, translated nicely. Anu means follow, and shilana means behavior, or cultivation. Following our predecessor acharyas, following the teachings of Rupa Goswami, given to us by Srila Prabhupada and his followers. We follow that by cultivation. And then false shelters fade. The real shelter, it's exactly this luminal space. It fits exactly with that theme. So I'll emphasize it again so we can have some take-home, like new terminology, where we are and where we want to be, and enter into that space where, okay, I have all these other shelters. Now I want Krishna, you're my only shelter. You start going there from where we are to there. You cultivate it. And the strength for doing so is the example of the perfected souls that are leading the way. Path is already there. All the markers are there. We just follow it. And the strength to do so is also there. It's a question of what do we desire? We want our comfort zone, then we'll stay with our false shelters. And, you know, repeated births and deaths in the same situation. You want to do this one again? Let's go to Krishna. So then there's actions that have to be taken. Placing our faith in Krishna. Slowly. In a sustainable way. Slowly. Keep moving. And as you keep moving, there's a symbolic death of something. The false shelters fall away. It doesn't mean you become negligent in your responsibilities, but they're not your shelter. They're just services to Krishna of different varieties. And if they're not services to Krishna, then they fall away completely. In course of time. You give energy, give life, you invest consciousness in that which is in relation to Krishna. That's spiritual life. And as our life unfolds, we become Krishna conscious. And after this life, we go to Krishna. And the other things are left behind. If there's something that's truly spiritual, it comes with us. If something that's not, it's left behind. Last question over here, and then we're going to have our kirtan. Ready? Okay.
Thank you very much. Question is that at all times acting with full dependence on Krishna's mercy.
You like that one, huh?
Very much.
Uh-huh.
But how can we cultivate that at all times in all given situations?
Step by step. One mantra at a time. Thank you very much for asking that question, because you fell right into the trap. I mean, it's incremental, step by step. And to each step, with its maximum consciousness and attentiveness, and then the next step, with maximum attentiveness and consciousness, the next step, and gradually it grows. That's how it becomes nothing else. Nice, huh?
Yeah. I have one more item to propose on this. This please. That's taste. So, ruchi, according to
Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Shikshastakam verse number 4, which we're going to chant together in a minute, deals with taste. Remember that little mathematical equation that I gave? Humility plus need equals or produces shelter in Krishna. The need is the need for mercy, need for spiritual substance and strength and intelligence and wisdom and capacity beyond our own capacity. And when circumstances are clearly beyond our own capacity, but we're sincerely striving with humility, then that brings about taking shelter. And as the intensity, so this is the mathematical formula is now being changed or modified, when need becomes stronger, that results in taste. The intensity of feeling the need for Krishna's mercy in our life. As that grows, it becomes taste. So let's chant together Shikshastakam verse number 4. Give you a sheet of the note verse.
Nadanam nadajanam nasundari haritam haritishatam ahe mahajanari janarishvare
I'll read the translation. Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. Janmani Jamanishvare indicates even liberation. So, what inspires people? Worldly people? Wealth, or enjoyment with male-female association, or followers, people that admire me, and so forth. Like we were just discussing earlier, appreciation and recognition for something. And if that taste is gone, then liberation. I want out of this program. So Jamini, Jamini, even that is not an aspiration or an attraction for me. Lord Chaitanya is praying it this way. But Ahaituki Bhakti. Ahaitu means cause, and Ahaituki is without cause. Causeless devotional service. So I've been speaking about the role of the mood of service to help us with tolerance and humility. because that doesn't change. Our opportunities to serve don't change by circumstance. Service, we can serve in any circumstance. If we're awake to the mood of service, we can serve in any circumstance. Because we're constitutionally servants, so we can serve in any circumstance. And if we're not placing demands upon Krishna of service in this circumstance, that circumstance, but just simply service. I can say I'm learning a lot about the realm of doing things that I don't want to do. Just got through doing one. I'll just share this with you. I was requested to attend a meeting in Italy and missed the New York Rath Yatra. And I said, forget it. I'm not going to miss New York Rath Yatra. I've been there since when Prabhupada first went on the Rath Yatra, 1975. You know, fast forward over time. How many years is that? 75 to, 2010. 35 years. And you want me to go miss New York Rath Yatra? Forget it. No, it's really important. It's really important. Okay, it's really important. Somebody else can go, and I'm going to go to New York Rath Yatra. It's really important. No, you've got to go because of this and that and the other thing and the other thing. I don't have to go because of this, that thing, the other thing. I want to go to New York Rath Yatra. No, you have to go. So I said, I'll ask Ramabhadra, the president of New York Temple. And he said, sounds like a very important meeting, Maharaj. Maybe you have to go. I said, no. You were supposed to say that. You were supposed to say, you can't go. This is New York Rath Yatra. Anyway, fast forward, and I went. I missed New York Rath Yatra. I asked Ramabhadra, it was one of the top three Rath Yatras out of all 35 that ever happened. You know, in hindsight, was it the right decision? Was it so important that I had to go, and if I didn't go, it wouldn't have been the right choice to make? I don't know. I told them, look, if you want to have another meeting, second weekend of June, I'm not coming. Have it some other time. Now, depends on what's going to happen with this facility. This facility where we are, it may not be the best time of the year to have a retreat. But the way that we got this facility is that they have a grandfather clause that means whoever the year before, and the year before, and the year before, whoever had this space gets it next year, no matter what. If they ask for it. If they don't ask for it, then so somebody that had it for so many years didn't ask for it this year. They decided to do something else. So we got it. So, you know, we're going to be here next year unless, you know, there's another plan to have another one, maybe in July because the weather's better, and maybe there's less interference with something else, but anyway, doing things that you don't want to do is part of life. Part of mature life, anyway. But there has to be a reason why to do things you don't want to do, because it's service. And when that mood of service grows, there's protection. Protection from all kinds of other stuff, like, you know, things that cause misery, is other things that you know, it's important because blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and that mood of service, when it grows and grows, it's service to Krishna, service to Krishna's holy name. And by entering into that mood of service unto Krishna's holy name, that's causeless. Ahaituki bhakti. When it's mature, it becomes like that. And then one can serve Krishna in any circumstance. One can chant the holy name in any circumstance. And feel Krishna's shelter. That's the number nine. And have, because there's taste, that was number eight. And then number nine. Taste. Okay, so want to speak a little bit about transitioning from, well, two things. What's the characteristic, what's the distinction between steady, in the Sanskrit term nishtha, and ruchi? Those of you that know the teachings of Rupa Goswami, you know that there's 9 stages of bhakti. And the first one is faith, shraddha, and then comes sadhusanga, then comes bhajana kriya, then comes anartha nivritti, then comes nishtha, and then comes ruchi. So in the stage of nishtha, steady, nishtha, steady devotion, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, and our acharyas, there still may be some trace of impurity. Because the goal is purity. There may be still some trace of impurity. That verse from the Bhagavatam, nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. So nashta means eliminated, destroyed. Prayeshu means almost complete, almost completely destroyed. Abhadreshu, abhadra means inauspicious things. Things in the heart that are, they don't belong there. Abhadras. There's bhadra and there's abhadra. And there's subhadra. Subhadra is very auspicious. And abhadra is inauspicious things within the heart. There's a stage called nishtha, where they're almost destroyed. Where they're almost destroyed means they're still there, but bhakti is so strong that bhakti prevails. So here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has described devotion on the nishtha platform, where those things that are abhadras, the impurities of heart, they're still there. But when they manifest, they're like pushing, what happens? The devotee takes shelter of Krishna. So, number 8 was namashraya. So, you know, tomorrow morning we're chanting our 64 rounds, or 32 rounds, or whatever it is, and we're hit a dry spot. Like, mechanical, really struggling. Where does your attention go? Where is your shelter? And one who is on this stage of nishtha, there may be some pulling or pushing or some distraction or something. Somebody does something and you feel angry about that something. But you don't stay there because you take shelter of Krishna. It doesn't prevail in the nishtha platform because shelter of Krishna is there. Or the strength of devotional service, of wanting simply to please Krishna, is so strong, it overrules. The light is stronger than darkness. That's on the nishtha platform. And on the ruchi platform, it's stronger. It's so strong that there's hardly any darkness remaining. Here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it in Madhurya Kadambini. The reason for going through this is it's way beyond our platform, but it helps us understand of how the earlier elements are necessary to go further in devotional service into this platform where there's actually a taste for chanting. He's describing the journey of a soul who's approaching the platform of taste. What can I say? I am unfortunate, for I am the lowest criminal. Though I have received the Though I have received the mercy of my spiritual master, I have not understood its proper value. Instead, I have been wandering everywhere, And in this way, I'm wasting my very life. Keeping a precious jewel tied to the hem of my cloth, I have been searching out a cracked shell because it is glittering, a piece of glass. I've been searching for a spot of false happiness between the banks of the river of material engagements. I'm not seriously practicing any anga or part of bhakti. For that, I manifest no energy. So deceitful I am. There's humility, in fact, strong humility, and a kind of despondency over how much I've wasted my energy in purposeless pursuits. But the strong, the opposite is, there's a strong desire to take shelter of the real thing. In advancing in Krishna consciousness, advancing in the quality of our chanting of the holy name, humility is a very important quality. Let's say it the other way around. It doesn't look well if you have a proud sadhu. Something's wrong in that picture. Something's wrong in that picture. When there's genuine humility, circumstances don't provoke that individual. Rather, because their focus is one thing. It's not upon our people honoring or dishonoring. It's upon service to Krishna and their insufficiency in their capacity to serve Krishna nicely. Then one can advance further in the chanting of the holy name and have real taste. So we have this nice song, Kabe Bolo Se Din Amar. When, oh when, will I have that taste? When will that come to me? There's a hankering for Krishna's shell, for a deepening of Krishna's. The need has become stronger in that stage. And therefore, shelter is stronger in that stage. That's where taste comes. What stops us from achieving that? Our false shelters. And, you know, it may be blatant, and it may be subtle, but false shelters. So, now we'll go back toward the beginning part of this. So, whatever stage of these nine items, could you flip back to the previous page? Whatever stage we are, perform from that platform. Again, speaking from the mood of the retreat, think of oneself entering this retreat as a neophyte, not I'm an advanced devotee and I'm expecting, you know, to make the bell ring. The buzzer is going to sound and I'm going to somehow achieve something. In a very humble mood, striving according to whatever the mercy that Krishna bestows upon us, See, check yourself in your eagerness to try to chant, in your eagerness to try to hear, in your eagerness to focus your hearing and chanting of Krishna's holy name upon this sankalpa that you established. You wrote it down and shared it with others. And so forth. And from time to time it may slide back, it may move forward. And you can be detached from whatever that position is, rather be concerned that you're acting in your relationship with Krishna, with the holy name, as capacity is provided because we're dependent upon Krishna. And that those feelings of humility will amplify, or awaken at least. Krishna, please be merciful. And the mercy doesn't have to be according to my standard of what that mercy should be. The mercy is, I want to be in my relationship with you. Let me feel your presence. Let me have access to serving you in all circumstances that you arrange for me. Then we can progress further and further in our chanting. So there's a little summary. And a clock is still moving. We still have some other things to do in our schedule, so I think we'll... Let's do this. Take... the schedule says... Oh, it's 5:30. Okay, great. I was going at 5 o'clock. Okay. So I'll take questions for a bit, and then we'll... You, for the last one. Anyone questions? Discussion? Yes. Turn the speaker. 30 degrees. Okay, very good. Go ahead.
So, Maharaj, there were some questions on humility and forgiveness. And to me, when you know, Arjun, as you gave an example that Arjun was showing false humility, so to me it also seemed that he was trying to forgive something, which was, you know, pretty, you know, offensive,
yes,
on the part of, you know, the followers. So Maharaj, how do we make this distinction that, you know, when we forgive, it doesn't become false humility?
Okay, good.
So I'm getting confused in this, you know, conflicting. Like, to me it seems a conflict, but, you know, probably you can resolve it.
Well, real short answer requires refinement when you apply it, but the principle is it should be upon the soul. Virtue misplaced is upon the body. Virtue properly placed is upon the soul. Okay, now how do we make that distinction between on the body or on the soul platform? We need guidance. There are times when, you know, your father. There are times when discipline is required. And to your children, it may mean, it may look like something other than, you know, a loving act. And it might be and it might not be, but let's go with the position where it's a loving act. What's the consciousness behind it? When the consciousness behind it is, not only there is a feeling of love for the child, but you know that there's a connection with the child, that they know that there's love. And that's the place where the discipline is coming from. Now in this case, like the Kurukshetra battlefield case, these individuals were, what's the word? They couldn't be reformed. The term for that. I mean, Krishna demonstrated it. They're unretrievable. They were, you know, they couldn't get it, no matter what. And so it was, in that case, it was directly Krishna's instruction. That's not, you know, we don't have that privilege, commonly, where Krishna tells us, you know, do something. Exhibit forgiveness, or, you know, like, another nice example is, Ashwatthama, and Krishna said, well, first Arjun took his vow, I'll kill, you know, you can perform the funeral for your five sons standing on his head, his severed head, I'll bring his severed head back for you. And he brought Ashwatthama back, and Draupadi said, don't do it. And Yudhisthira, his elder brother, who he would never do anything other than what his elder brother said, don't do it. Bhima said, do it. And Krishna said, do it. And he gave, you know, he gave the reasons why it's not a problem if you do it. You're not killing a Brahmin because he's not a Brahmin, because anyone that says this is not a Brahmin. So that's taken care of. Do it. know whether to be forgiving and compassionate or to take his life. That Prabhupada explains in the purport, what Krishna wanted to do is to demonstrate the quality of Arjuna. That even in that, you know, most perplexing of situations, it's, you know, one or the other. How to resolve the one or the other. I find there are situations in life that are like that. Probably all of us do. And how do you apply yourself? Well, if you're not Krishna conscious, you won't know how to apply yourself. You're going to make mistakes. So it's best to be situated under some authority that's really qualified. You know, kind of a cop-out is, well, they'll take responsibility even if it's the wrong thing. It's not we want, you know, get our backs covered. We want to do the right thing. So it takes, this is this liminal space that we're speaking about, a prayerful mood. So whatever you do or don't do, even you don't do, that's also an action. And is that the right action? To don't do. But it takes a prayerful mood. At least this much we can do. Strive to whatever capacity Krishna has given us, that we're on the spiritual platform. We're not acting on a platform, even if it's forgiveness or not. No, it's on the platform of what Krishna wants, what's pleasing to Krishna. Now, one of the principles that applies in the matter of forgiveness is you can forgive the sinner but not the sin. You can forgive the person. Now you may take some action about the behavior that was wrong. And life requires such decisions. And to be a Vaishnav, we have to be leaders of exemplary individuals in making the right decisions. We can't abdicate that responsibility. Because no action is another action. Or indecision is another decision. Sometimes we have to wait until things become more clear, if they're not clear. But stay on that position of praying, you know, sincerely to Krishna, that what the right thing is, that he illumines what that right thing is to be done. And at some point when some decision is taken, be ready to retract, take one step forward, be ready to take 10 steps back if Krishna gives some indication that wasn't the right decision. Because then we're not attached to the decision or the outcome, we're attached to pleasing Krishna. Just at least strive for that. Now, just one last thing on the forgiveness. When Arjuna was fighting, because Krishna wanted him to, it wasn't out of anger. He had gotten over, they can have the kingdom. But his fighting wasn't, I haven't forgiven you. It was because Krishna wanted him to do that. So that answer is, forgiveness is appropriate in all circumstances. Now what do you do about the circumstance? What's the appropriate way of serving in a given circumstance? It's delicate. Life is filled with such things. But we're Vaishnavas being trained to please Guru and Krishna by their kindness and their mercy. We can achieve that. Yes? Microphone?
Prabhu, Maharaj, is there any kind of a litmus test that we can do with some when we are having humility or the decisions that we are making is aligned with the spiritual...
Well, a simple litmus test is how much are you thinking of Krishna? Who is in the center? That's a litmus test. Commonly, me. Even if it's, you know, I've been very forgiving. Follow? And that's incomplete. It's better than, you know, retaliation, but it's not transcendental. Krishna, how much is Krishna at the center?
in that case, most of the decision that we will take will be an indecision, because it will be more centered towards us. So I will not take any decision because it is anyway not.
Well, that, you know, that indecision is a decision, and the other decision is a decision. So the question is not indecision or decision. The question is who's at the center. Who is being pleased by this? The servant wants to please the master. The selfish person wants to please himself. And so, selfish or selfish, take your pick. I derive a sense of contentment because I've been forgiving. I derive a sense of contentment because I retaliated. Who is at the center? Put Krishna at the center. What will please Krishna? What's appropriate? Yes?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you spoke about the prayer that Krishna, please accept me.
Yeah.
I don't really understand the meaning of that prayer.
Okay. I can easily speak about it because it resonates very strongly with me. We turned our attention away from Krishna. Krishna didn't turn his attention away from us. We exercised our free will very foolishly. And having done so for countless numbers of lifetimes, now we find ourselves in a situation where we recognize the foolishness of that misuse of free will. However, there's a problem. The problem is our tendency to continue to misuse our free will is very strong. Our conditioned tendencies are very strong. So we're unfit for Krishna to be again in Krishna's association. So it's with those two ideas. I'm unfit, but Krishna, you're merciful, please accept me again in your service. It's another way of translating, you know, what the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra is. One way is, Krishna, please engage me in your service. This is another way of saying the same thing with emphasis on humility. Krishna, please accept me in your eternal service once again. I've turned my back on you. I mean, it's just like, you know, repairing a damaged relationship with someone. I bailed. I turned my back on you and walked the other way. And I've suffered a lot. I've made very, very terrible damage in our relationship. Please accept me back in this relationship. I'm making that amend. It's, you know, unpacked, it says many other things. I've hurt myself. I've hurt others. I've damaged our relationship. You're independent. You don't need me at all. I need you. There's all good reason for you to say no. Because, you know, I've been so hurtful. You're my only shelter. So please accept me again in your association. And with that mood, one can chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Krishna, please accept me in your eternal service. Please give me a place with you in your entourage of perfected souls serving you. I have no qualification for that, but I'm asking. Engage me in your service. Uh-huh. Okay, last question. Through the last part of our evening program.
When I chanted, many times I fall into the trap of struggle. I want to do it better, but mind is obstructing. And many times I'm even sick.
Wait. The last part. And you're trying to chant better, but you're struggling with?
It's like a struggle with the mind.
The mind, oh, okay.
And the mind, most of the time, mind wins.
Okay.
So I feel, does this kind of chanting carry any weightage in increasing the love to Krishna? Sometimes it demotivates me. So how should I demotivate myself?
It demotivates you when your mind wins instead.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how do I motivate? Like, I feel, does it really help me in raising the love? Does this kind of chanting, it's... So how do I motivate myself to win?
This is where humility comes in, and the call for some special dispensation from Krishna called mercy. Krishna, you can dialogue with Krishna, pray to Krishna. You know my circumstance, but I'll disclose it anyway. I'm struggling. You just, you know, as you expressed, you say to Krishna, or from your heart, you have to necessarily articulate the words, but the emotion is there. I'm struggling. And it's due to my long sojourn in material existence where my mind is so rebellious, it doesn't want to be at your lotus feet. But as the spirit soul, I want to be there. This rebellious mind is making it very difficult. Krishna, kindly pick me up. Kindly show your mercy. Help me. Give me strength. Etc. It's when it did this at the retreat in Sharanagati. When a child goes like that, everybody knows what that means. So go like that with Krishna. Krishna! That's what you do. And what does the loving parent do? They pick up the child. Then it's no longer, they're on their own. Commonly, at least what I've observed, is very shortly after the child is picked up, they don't really want to get back down again. Or, if it's their mother, then they reach their arms out to their father. So then it goes over to the father, and then they want back down again. Just want to, you know, that warmth, and the reassurance, and the acceptance. So there's that phrase again. Krishna, please accept me. I you know my situation, my mind, and I desire, but my mind, and struggling, and my mind wins. Krishna, please pick me up. And you can do it energetically, or you can even do it literally. One of our devotees here does that. We'll see tomorrow. Okay. So now we're going to go into the last part of our preparation for the 64-round day.